As I was looking for a lesson to do, I had done a lesson on this scripture before, but for a different reason, actually. So it's completely something off the wayside what I did last time. But as I was reading about King David and Solomon, and I look at the Psalms that Solomon wrote, I thought it was interesting some of the correlations. But where does a sturdy foundation start from? The world tells you many different things. But when King Solomon was, well, I should say when he, before he was king, he was about to come king, David gives him instructions. So I want you to turn over to 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 through 4. Again, that's 1 Kings chapter 2, starting in verse 1. As David's time to die drew near, he charged Solomon his son, saying, I'm going the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, show yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and his testimonies, according to what is written in the law of Moses, that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn, so that the Lord may carry out his promise which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons are careful of their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Tony pointed out that David wasn't a good father overall to most of his sons, and I completely agree with that. But somewhere with Solomon, he had taught him something of God's commandments. So it looks like he did something right with King Solomon. And David basically says, be a man. It's time to go on your own, set forth, and run the country and the family. But King Solomon was very humble in his start, and I think his foundation was correct in the beginning. Towards the end, you see it definitely veer from the path that God would have for him. But just turn to the next chapter in chapter 3. And notice his wording with God. Starting in verse 7, chapter 3. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in the place of my father David. Yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil, for who's able to judge this great people of yours? And also in verse 14, is part of God's reply. It says, if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days. And when you think about that is, when David gave instruction, it was just about Solomon himself, him as a king and his family, so the future generations would fear and walk in the way of the Lord and hold the throne. So it's kind of a three-set. It's that his family, himself, and also the nation for a good foundation. But in verse 3 of chapter 2, at the end, you'll notice he says that you may succeed in all that you do and wherever you turn, when that's dealing with God. And I think it's important is that that was a sure foundation that there was success in. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it, that this is the way you should go, and you will be successful in that. But at times, God gives us simple instructions. And we all know, most of us know about King Solomon's life, is that as he got older, it seemed like he started just diverting. Eventually, his heart was no longer with God, and what we know towards the end of his life. And I think men especially understand this, is that we're making a trip. Let's just say this is starting point A, and it goes all the way down to B. And Let's say if you're married, your wife prints out instructions before there was easy GPS or Google and all that good stuff. Because if you get lost, it's easy to get back on the road. But your wife prints out the instructions. She has a map where she highlights where you're supposed to go. She writes down every turn that you should do. And I've had this happen in my family. When I was growing up, it happened often. But there'd be perfect directions. You won't get lost. It's for sure this is a successful way to get there. If you just follow the instructions, the directions. And what happens is a father, which they tend to do, is that they, what's a more color that's, as I draw this, a father will start heading down that path, and at some point he says, well, there's a big gap between here and there. You know, I know the faster way that'll cut off an hour. Instead of it taking 2 hours there, I'll get there in an hour. And what happens is the wife gives a little bit of input and says, honey, why don't we just stick to there? Then we'll know we get there on time. We won't have to worry, not stress. He says, no, I know the right way on how to get there faster, even though he's never been there before. And so what he does, he starts cutting in. And as time goes on, you know, he hits an hour, and he's not really sure where he's at. Because remember, this is before Google and non-expensive GPS. And it was supposed to take only 2 hours. An hour and a half through when the wife says, hey, honey, are you sure you just want to just try to find the road and go back to where we're? No, I know where I'm going. I know we're a little bit longer than an hour, but I know we're going to get there on time. And slowly, 2.5 hours pass by. And the wife kind of looks over and sees him tense and mumbling to himself a little bit and everything else known mankind. And what happens? She goes, honey, are you sure we shouldn't do it? Let's just, it'll be okay. And the husband goes, I wanted to come this way because there's nice trees and scenic route. The motivation starts changing, right? Like, this is the reason I want. But in truth, and eventually, you know, he stops at a gas station like way over here and he sneaks a map in his pocket and then gets direction from the gas station attendant and goes, I know where I'm going. But the point is that God gives us clear instructions and a lot of times we like to take shortcuts concerning his foundation. A lot of times we think we can somehow get ahead, do our own way, and lay a different foundation than what he has told us. And usually it comes down to pride. So if you would turn over to Psalms 127, that'll be our text today. Psalms 127. Starting in verse 1, it says, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors. For he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. That last part is talking about God. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in a hand of a warrior. So are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man who has a quiver full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. And when you see it says, unless the Lord, and it repeats that phrase twice, unless the Lord builds the house, the labor is in vain, and those who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays up late for nothing. And when you look at this, the idea is, if you're not going to follow, it's all in vain. And a lot of times we blame a foundation for crumbling for many different reasons. But it's usually because of, usually it's a family structure or something of the sort. A lot of people think the reason why a nation crumbles is because of a bad politician or maybe it's the people who run the city or other things. When you look at the Bible, it always starts at the very bottom of who all the people follow and believe in. It always starts with a base of a generation growing up that isn't well-founded in God. So turn over to Judges chapter 2, starting in verse 10. Judges chapter 2, verse 10. And at this time, Joshua and the generation just before him, because Joshua was older than that generation, had died away. They had gone to the promised land, and Joshua and that generation had died away. And this is just one generation after. And it says, all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them, who did not know the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. Just think about it. One generation was there, and then the next one comes up, and they no longer follow God. And you might say, well, some people might have made some bad choices, but this is the majority of the whole entire nation. God had given them instructions on how to follow him so they would not depart from his ways, from simple putting tassels on their robes, blue ones, so they wouldn't forget his commandments and to teach your kids in and out. But apparently that did not happen. They knew of the Lord, but they didn't personally know him as a friend to know and love and go after him. See, when the foundation isn't built with God, what happened to Israel? Every time they gave over to their own desires, whenever they got rich, when they started serving other gods, usually that happened at the same time, they stopped trusting God, and the next generation especially just completely deserted. The very foundation that they had eroded, and they put a new one down. Their house was no longer built by the Lord, it was built on their own. What happened if the Lord doesn't build the house? Is it a stable house? No. Notice what it says in the rest of verse 1. In Psalms 1, 27, verse 1. It says, unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. See, Israel could come wealthy. They could grow up and be prosperous. But the instant they left the Lord, it was useless for a watchman to do his job. Because if they were no longer for God, they were against him. Turn over to Psalms chapter 33, 13 through 17. Psalms 33, 13 through 17. And what we need to understand is that if a house isn't stable, it falls. If the God isn't guarding you, you're never safe. It doesn't matter if you can see an enemy or coming not. If God is not with you, if he is not your guard, then there's no security. And Psalms 33, 13 through 17 says, the Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From his dwelling place, he looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth. He who fashions the hearts of them all. He who understands all their works. The king is not saved by a mighty army. A warrior is not delivered by great strength. A horse is a false hope for victory, nor does it deliver anyone by its great strength. Yeah, keep going. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him and on those who hope for his loving kindness to deliver their soul from death and keep them alive in famine. Our soul waits for the Lord. He is our help and our shield, for our heart rejoices in him because we trust in his holy name. Let your loving kindness, O Lord, be upon us according as we have hoped in you. Notice that the Lord is the shield. He is that guard. He is that person if they keep their hope and trust in him. That's the idea the psalmist is trying to get across, is that David charged Solomon to do the very same thing. This is your foundation. Follow it. Be a man and instruct and be a king like this and teach your sons. But sadly, what happens is, actually, first let's jump over to 1 Samuel chapter 2, 9 through 10. And notice the contrast between the wicked and the godly. This is the prayer of Samuel's mom, if I remember correctly. Or a praise. 1 Samuel chapter 2, starting verse 9. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord will be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king, and will exalt the horn of his anointed. In truth, in the end, God will make sure his people are secure, while those who have given themselves over to sin and no longer build on his foundation will be done away with, who contend with him. I think these psalms really reflect what happens to King Saul. But what I want to point out is that there is no rest when you're a wicked person because everything's unsure. In verse 2 of Psalms 127, it says, "It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep." There's the same statement made over in Ecclesiastes that's similar. Ecclesiastes 2, starting in verse 23. Ecclesiastes 2, starting in verse 23, it says, "Because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him?" And we kind of think about that statement is, the truth is you can't have true peace, you can't have security or true enjoyment unless it comes from God, unless he builds the house, unless he guards the city. In verse 26, also talks about the righteous and the unrighteous. It says, "For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. While to the sinner, he has given the task of gathering, collecting, so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind." What we need to understand with those first couple verses is any foundation is movable. Any house can collapse and fall over unless the Lord builds it. Any city or nation can be taken unless the Lord guards it. And we have to understand is that for God is unmovable, he is our rock, and he is all-powerful, and nothing can stand before him. And that's why we take that security. And that's why I think Solomon's stating this, because he knows this as king when he wrote this psalm. And I think he honestly started out that way. But the next part hits on another idea, the same idea, but the blessing from God that he gives to his beloved in the end of verse 2. And let's read through that one more time. Psalms 127, 3 through 5. And it says, "Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate." Just like there's only one right way to build the city, there's only one good protector for security, there's only one right way to build a family. There's only one right way to raise them. God talks about what a blessing a family can be. Notice what words are used about family. Children are a heritage, a reward, a blessing to have them. Some versions say gift. Something that God has given you that you're responsible on building that house correctly and to guard them, to keep watch. As it says in the first two verses. See, just like they who build in the charge of the foundation, what will each layer be and how stable it will be, so the parents also do the same thing. Just like the watchman looks out for trouble, will you watch out and protect your family? In what way? Is it with God or without him? And there's interesting phrases used when you look through here. And maybe some of you have heard them before. The first one is, children are like arrows in the hand of a warrior. And a warrior is one of those things of where you kind of think about it. It doesn't say a mime. It doesn't say a doctor. You know, a warrior has a purpose on how to use what he's been given very accurately. And if you remember, but when we read in 1 Kings chapter 3 and chapter 2, David says, "Hey, time to be a man. To live up, to do something." And then chapter 3 of 1 Kings, What did it say? He says, I'm like a child to God. What do I do? He's like, okay, I am a child. I have no idea how to run. But what do I need to do? To run a nation, to run his own family, he needed to be the warrior that could direct, that could use those arrows. See, he wanted to become skilled and experienced so he could become God's faithful leader. When you think of a warrior, he understands his bow, he understands all the equipment, it's always kept up to date, clean. A warrior isn't a child. There's that kind of a horrible saying, but, you know, you're not a child with a handgun, you're an experienced person with a weapon when it comes to this area of your life. And that's one of the points, is that you're a skilled warrior that knows how to use every piece of equipment and to be ready. The next part is that I kind of noticed was, it talks about the arrows. And arrows can be made out of different things. But notice it says that the kids are the arrows, the children. And who are they given from? They're given from God. God has fashioned these arrows. They have a purpose. He has given them to their parents. And you need to know how to use them correctly. There's different purposes for arrows. There's short range, long range, armor piercing, wood, some different types of metal, different heads. But a warrior knows how to use all of them. And kids tend to be all different personalities. The truth is, God has given them as a blessing, as a reward, as a heritage. And you are to use them like a warrior here. They're fashioned with a purpose. And are you going to use them with that purpose? At the very top of the verse says, in a hand of a warrior, which means they're ready to be used, ready to be shot. That he understands their purpose, the priority on how they are supposed to be wielded. In Proverbs 22, verse 6, gives the same idea about arrows being in the hand of a warrior. It says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. If you truly are that warrior, I'm not saying kids don't go bad, don't get me wrong. But if you truly are worried in your experience and you have been skilled, you look for knowledge and wisdom as Solomon stepped into kingship, as a husband and wife steps into parenthood, should be the same response Solomon has. I'm a child, what do I do? How do I become skilled? How do I how to direct my child in the right way? And just like arrows in a warrior, when he pulls back and gets ready, is he shooting at random? I think it was from 6 till 14. It's a lot of years to be that way. But we used to take a bow and arrow. It was a junky one, but this is the idea of being a child with kids. If you're a parent, same idea, is that we would take the arrow, and for fun, we would aim it straight up, close our eyes, and shoot it and run. Just stupidity. Because it's something that actually did happen. And it's funny, because we didn't get hurt. But the truth is, when we have 10 friends over, and one of them got killed, it wouldn't be funny anymore, right? And that's the idea, is that you can't take something, close your eyes, and go, I hope it hits its target. See, Solomon understood that, as David gave him the charge and as he made the request to God, is that there's a charge for you to do. There's a purpose. And God has given you a heritage, a gift, and that is the children. And it's all talking about that foundation that's being built, unless the Lord builds it, unless he watches, or unless he guards. So what I think about is, as a warrior, you think about, have I given direction? Am I skilled? Or am I just winging it? And that could go for your own personal life. And if you don't have kids, you can think how your parents are raising you or how you're doing right now. Are you being skilled with what God has given you? One of the things I wanted to do, because I have a couple minutes left, and I told the couple of men I'd call them up here, is, has mostly everybody heard of the game named Jenga? Yeah, I'm guessing so. A few, see a few nods. Hopefully I can get this out without destroying it. Jenga is an interesting game. The further you get down on the foundation of it, the worse it starts to swivel and go. Let's see if I can actually do this. There we go. So we got this game out here, Jenga. And people tend, it doesn't have to be kids, but I'm going to use kids as an example, because the psalm is about anyone. And the truth is, we tend to build our foundation by our actions and what we do. And we tend to put things in the wrong priority. But I'm going to ask you, where would God choose the foundation being the most important? Where would God choose the importance of the things that I mentioned? I'll go from really not important at all the way down to very important. And so I want you to take away. So Devin, where would God, and I'll have to come up here and take away the block, where would God in this priority, remember this being the most important, put video games, board games, all that type of stuff? So come up here and where would it be at? That one. All right. Now your parents know that you don't need your video game system no more. These things aren't necessarily bad. It's just, what's the priority? If a kid can point out video games aren't his life, a well-founded kid in the Lord, I might say, but if a kid can point out this is one of the most unimportant things that doesn't affect the foundation at all, starts putting your priorities right. The next thing I'd like to point out is TV and entertainment. Where does that go towards God's foundation from most important to not important? I didn't ask Clint, but Clint, why don't you come choose? Take one from the top. Okay, so we understand the useless things in life, even though a lot of people do spend 3 to 5 hours a night, usually, if they work, if they don't, more than that, a night watching TV. Where's the foundation at? Austin, what about when you were growing up? School, sports, I don't know if you did chess club, band, whatever it may be. You don't look like you did any of those. Why don't you come over and pick out where that is? And that's sports and chess club and band. Where would that be? There we go. So you got sports, you got chess club, you got band, things that make you learn, things that make you play. Sports actually taught me a lot, believe it or not. But in all instances, they're not that important, is it? Let's get a little bit more. Jeff, what about education? We're talking about secular education, since you're a teacher also at a college. What about education? How important is that to the foundation below? Try to make it even if you can.
Yeah.
There we go. So we're getting a little bit more towards the base. Some more important things. Tony. I'm looking around who's left. Now I'll call up here. What about prayer? Smart man. Oh.
get that back in there.
All right. We'll do one more, Andrew, since you're up front. What about church? Might be sacrificed for sports or for whatever reason. People give a lot of excuses. But when you start sporadically, you're strong at first, and then you start spacing out, and you go once a month, once every couple months, show up every once in a while. So if you were to, where would that be in the foundation, Andrew? And then we could get in helping your family grow, having a Bible study, practicing your faith with them. Where would that be around the foundation? Your own purposeful Bible study. Being that example, family time in God's Word. Notice that all the stuff that's really important is the foundation. And that's what we have to realize, is that God has given us instructions that this is the core. So if we sacrifice this, this doesn't really matter. If we sacrifice this, your family might have everything, but in the end, it will be meaningless. So in Psalms 127, verse 5, I have three more scriptures to illustrate this point. Some versions might say he, in the second part of this verse, but from my understanding, it should say they, referring to the children. How blessed is a man who has a quiver full of them, referring to the children. They, referring to the children, will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. See, if you have let go and your sons or daughters have not departed from your way, and they're just like you, a warrior, when they go up to their enemies, when they might be accused of something, they're not going to be ashamed of what they have done. It's within God's foundation, His way. But if you didn't teach them the foundation, just as in Judges 2:10, they didn't teach them the foundation, they all fell away within a generation, we see the other result. Turn over to Job chapter 5, starting in verse 3. Job chapter 5, starting in verse 3. It says, I have seen the foolish taking root. So the foolish do take root, those who are going the wayward side. And I curse his abode immediately. His sons are far from safety. Notice there's no security because they're not with God. They are even oppressed or crushed, as the word can be translated, in the gate. And there is no deliverer. The psalm we just read talks about unless the Lord builds it, unless the Lord keeps guard. And you start seeing the idea is that if God is your foundation, you'll have those things. There's one last thing I want to point out. And if you turn over to Luke chapter 16, we're going to read about the rich man and Lazarus. Let me get that back in there. Messing with the foundation. There we go. Put all that back together real quick. I'm missing a piece. Oh, there it is. All right. So you got a sturdy foundation of school, sports, games, whatever you might be. This is your building. Let's read about the rich man and Lazarus. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying education. I'm not saying that video games are bad or having entertainment in your life and hanging out with people or that is bad, but it has its place. And if you were to lose it, in the long run, it kind of is vain in that. And what I mean by vain is the way it's used in Scripture is that it doesn't affect that foundation that you have. So starting in verse 19, it says, and notice the contrast between the rich man and Lazarus, the beggar, the poor man. Now there was a rich man, and he habitually dressed in purple and fine linen, joyously living in splendor every day. Here's a man who most people would say lived the life to the fullest. Expensive clothing, had fun, joyous times all the time. And I like how it says, living in splendor. Not just living and getting by, but he's living in splendor. He has everything. He most likely is an educated man. He has wealth. He has possessions, as it's pointing out. He has any type of food you'd want. He's a man that, this is secure. The top half is solid. But there was a poor man also. And a poor man named Lazarus was laid at his gate, covered with sores, and longing to be fed with the crumbs which were falling from the rich man's table. Besides, even the dogs were coming and licking his sores. And here's a man who, if it's because of disease, or maybe he was born with something, usually when you have nothing, you're usually laid so you can beg by somewhere. And maybe he doesn't have education. We're not told, but at this point, it's not doing him any good. He doesn't have any wealth. Doesn't look like he had really any possessions because he's begging for food. Now, hopefully, he can get something from the rich man's table. Then it says in verse 22, now the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died and was buried. Notice it says the poor man died. The part being carried away by angels probably means his spirit. But notice what it says about the rich man when he died. Died and was buried. The poor man just died. They probably threw him in the trash heap or just put him in a place where they put people who don't have enough money. In this world, he would be considered a failure. He'd be considered, he didn't have any of this up here. He didn't succeed in anything. The rich man, on the other hand, has a burial, which means he probably had a lot of built up things, an amazing funeral. Tons of people came and it was great in this life. But look what happens in verse 23. In Hades, he lifted up his eyes, being in the torment, and saw Abraham far away and Lazarus in his bosom. In case you're wondering, Lazarus is on the nice side where those who follow the Lord are, the rich man's in torments. In verse 24 it says, and he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus so that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool off my tongue, for I am in agony in this flame. But Abraham said, child, remember that during your life you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus bad things. But now he's being comforted here, and you are in agony. In Lazarus' life, he had, you could probably cut it down to here, all these things were taken away in his life by what it says. You could take off this almost this whole top piece and just chuck it. But what was still sturdy? He obviously was a follower of God. Now, the rich man knew who Moses was. At the very end it says, well, if they didn't listen to Moses, they're not going to listen to someone coming back from the dead. So the rich man knew about God, hands down. He was a Jew. But where was his foundation? His foundation basically, let's see if I can actually do this. Basically, this table is actually even. And I can't do it with the base, but I can do it with these two. There we go. So I take it out of the Jenga set there. Imagine if that was on the bottom. Basically, this was the rich man's foundation. He had everything the world could desire, but this was in horrible shape. And the question you have to ask yourself for yourself, and I have to use kids as an illustration because it's easier to imagine that way. Maybe you were growing up, your parents did this. Friend Jason, I met out camping, said he asked this in a class, and I thought it was a good question to ask. And if you do it or not, something that you can change, or if you're not doing this, that's great, is how many times do you make sure your kids or your parents that who raised you made sure that you had a good education foundation every night before you went to bed to get your schoolwork done? And parents, for the most part, make sure their kids have their schoolwork done by the end of the night. They have to be great in school and make sure they get to sports practice, right? But when it comes to God and their spiritual growth and their spiritual education, what happens? Do they do their Bible every night? Do they have family time and learning God's word every day? Is their foundation only being built up here or also down here? And when you start thinking about it, if you're putting so much effort towards all those things but lacking where the main thing is, they're going to end up like the rich man. But if you might have to sacrifice some things up here. Like I said, they're not necessarily bad. But if you make that sure foundation, you know that even if they're in Lazarus, the poor man's situation, you know where they're going. You know where that sturdy foundation will be. But if you leave your kids like this, how easy is this to tip over? Right? If you take away someone's wealth, their possessions, God's not their foundation, what happens when in times of trouble? All you have to do is use your pinky, and it kind of goes like that. And that's the truth of the world, is this life is short. Unless the Lord builds your house, unless He's your foundation, that's what happens to most of mankind. Now, presence, I know most of you hear that your foundation isn't that way, but it's more like Lazarus, that if anything does happen, the Lord is on your side and He does have that eternal security for you. So if there's anyone here tonight that wants to become a child of God, who wants that sturdy foundation in this world where there's lots of uncertainty and no security, but in God there is. If you're a brother and sister in Christ who is struggling and needs the prayers and brothers and to help relay that foundation, we're here for you as we stand and sing the psalm that's been selected.